Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, Connor Newt here with you. We hope you are having a wonderful Friday. We start with some breaking news from the Tennessee Titans released just a few minutes ago. Quote, due to unforeseen circumstances, Chris Johnson and his family are no longer able to travel to Nashville for this Sunday's game. Knowing how much he and his family desire to be in person at Nissan Stadium for his induction into the Titans Ring of Honor, we will postpone the official induction. We will postpone the official induction ceremony and look forward to celebrating the moment with them at a future date. Sunday's halftime ceremony will remain dedicated to celebrating Chris's incredible on-field achievements and legacy with our team. Our thoughts, along with those of Titans fans everywhere, continue to be with Chris and his wife, Brittany. So the Tennessee Titans announcing that Chris Johnson no longer able to travel to Nashville for this Sunday's game against the Jets, and therefore the Titans will be postponing his induction into the Titans Ring of Honor. Hopefully everything is okay with Chris Johnson. I know, Derek, a lot of your fellow former Titans players were coming into town to celebrate Chris Johnson on Sunday, but for the time being, it will be postponed.
Yeah, I'm sure they will still come and still celebrate whatever the tribute they're going to do to him for him during halftime. It's sad and it's just unfortunate. You know, you just hope that this was a minor setback and not something that, you know, is progressing a lot faster. And I'm meaning this one isolated incident, meaning he can't come here. I hope he is well enough to ultimately make the trip here to Nashville. But I'm sure it gets difficult, you know, flying. So my heart goes out to him and his family. But I know the Titans are doing a wonderful job at celebrating him this upcoming Sunday during halftime.
So again, from the Tennessee Titans, Chris Johnson unable to attend Sunday's game against the Jets. So therefore, the team will postpone his Ring of Honor ceremony. But Sunday's halftime ceremony, according to the Titans, will remain dedicated to celebrating Chris's incredible on-field achievements and legacy with our team. So wanted to pass that along. Frankly, it's going to be a bit of a somber opening segment on this Friday. Of course, we all know that today marks the 25-year anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks in our country, a day that changed our nation forever. And we remember all of the lives lost and affected by that terrible day. We will share some of our memories. You can share some memories as well. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And also, earlier today, we received some heartbreaking news from the Nashville Predators. Brent Peterson passed at the age of 68. All of you out there who have been longtime Predators fans know how much Brent Peterson loved the Nashville Predators, how much he loved being an ambassador of the Nashville Predators. He was an assistant coach for a long time under Barry Trotz. He, of course, was a broadcaster for a few years as well. One of my lasting memories in this job. The game-winning goal in triple overtime by Mike Fisher in the 2016 playoffs, second round against the San Jose Sharks. Pete Weber and Brent Peterson's call. You hear Pete call the goal, and Brent, I think, spoke for a lot of Predators fans in that moment. It was sort of this guttural yelp. And look, I think we all felt that way. I think that game ended at like 1:15 in the morning. So I think Brent captured that moment brilliantly, just basically screaming because he didn't know what else to do. And he was just a wonderful man. One of the first people in the Predators organization who made me feel welcome when I moved here in 2015. I cherished every conversation I had with Brent Peterson over the years. So to hear today that he has passed at the age of 68, he fought Parkinson's disease for a very long time, more than 20 years. He fought Parkinson's disease. He was, you know, he was at the forefront of trying to find a cure for that disease. And I think I speak for everybody here. I know Willie is going to share some words as well, but I was heartbroken to see this morning that Brent Peterson had passed.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a layered person in his role since I've known him, which was at the beginning of the Predators. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned his works because he had you touched on all of the different ways that he was a force in this community, first as a coach in a new hockey town. And that's my first memory of Brent, is he was, along with Barry Trotz and the players at the time, which included Andrew Brunette and Sebastian Bourdelo and some of the guys that are still part of the organization now, they knew that it was bigger than what happened on the ice. They were trying to introduce a sport to the city, and Brent couldn't have been better as one of the guys, and Barry Trotz set this tone too, of, hey, we need to be patient with people asking questions about the game. And Brent had a great perspective because he was a multi-sport star athlete growing up. He was a great player that predates any hockey played in Nashville. But he was one of those athletes, D-mates, that probably could have played a lot of different sports. He has a brother that was a great CFL wide receiver. He was a great football player, could have played that. But in Canada, of course, when you can play hockey, that's where you gravitate. And he was a high first-round pick. He had an outstanding career for a long time in the NHL, became a coach, learned a lot of things when he was coaching in Portland, Oregon, as a junior coach, and he bonded with the Portland Trailblazers, Dr. Jack Ramsey and the players on that team. And he learned a lot of concepts that he would bring as a coach. And so he had that mindset of looking beyond just hockey as a pure thing. So he really accepted and got what was going on as the edict from the franchise. The Predators knew as a franchise that they couldn't just roll out the hockey pucks and say, come on in, we're playing hockey. That they had to connect with the market on a lot of levels. And so when you think about Brent's contribution as a coach, as an ambassador, as somebody in the community when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's to take on the challenge not only of setting the example, living with the disease, but then creating a whole community and the Peterson for Parkinson's Foundation to help so many others in the same struggle. Like, I think you could argue he has been as impactful to the community as anybody involved with the organization. It's one thing to have the philosophy, we want to be connected to the community, but you need those people that actually take that philosophy and go do stuff. Brent was so amazing with that. And just a personal story, as a friend, I got to do some of the games with Brent on the radio for a couple of years. And that was some of the most fun times that I can remember. And we would sit together on the plane for every road trip, and he would talk about what he's up to and the struggles. But he was never about himself, or he was so unselfish. It was always about, how can I help people? So if he ever heard a story of somebody that had been diagnosed with Parkinson's, he would immediately, whether the person was famous, not famous, somebody that he knew, somebody he didn't know, he would always take it upon himself, say, give me the number, give me the phone number. I want to call that person. And he would bring them in, say, you know what, you're not alone in the struggle, you know, and we're going to fight this, join our group, be around people that are fighting the same battle. And I can't tell you how many people he made an impact on. And just even if you didn't have the connection to Parkinson's, how inspiring that was to how you live your life, how you set an example for others. It doesn't get much better than that. It really doesn't.
We will be at the Brent Peterson Golf Classic on Monday at the Greystone Golf Club in Dixon. And I know there will be a lot of emotions there on Monday. Last night was Petey's party.
Yes.
You went there right after the show, Willie. And, yeah, this one hurt. Brent Peterson was a lovely man, and that is understating it. I don't think I can put into words just how wonderful of a person he was. Willie just said so eloquently. So we all are mourning the loss of Brent Peterson.
And let me just make one more statement about being, I was at the event last night, and when I walked in there, I'll be honest, I didn't know how difficult his situation had gotten in the last few days. But it was so fitting. They did a tribute video montage with a lot of different people. And Shea Weber was in there. Pecorine was in there. Tom Fitzgerald, Lindy Ruff. You know, a lot of people who are his closest friends that he made an impact on. And they hit it so well. And it wasn't even about what they said. It's just how they said it. Just the true admiration and love that they and the impact that he had made. So it was so well done. And at the time that they made those videos, I don't think they knew exactly what had happened just in the last few days. And so, I'll never forget last night's event because it was a wonderful tribute, and nobody in the room exactly knew just how grave it had gotten. And when we got the news this morning, it was just obviously crushing. But, man, we will – the legacy is there. That's I think, one thing you want to be able to say when you leave this world is what kind of impact did you make? And he did it, man. He did it.
Absolutely. We mourn the loss of Brent Peterson, former Nashville Predators assistant coach and broadcaster, who died today at 68 years old after a very, very long battle with Parkinson's disease. Again, diagnosed with Parkinson's disease more than 20 years ago. A true inspiration to a lot of people. He will be sorely missed. I'm not going to lie. Today, it's kind of a crappy day today between the loss of Brent Peterson, remembering 25 years ago, September 11th, 2001, and then we got the news right before we came on the air that due to unforeseen circumstances, Chris Johnson and his family are no longer able to travel to Nashville for this Sunday's game. This is from the Titans, by the way. Knowing how much he and his family desire to be in person at Nissan Stadium for his induction into the Titans Ring of Honor, the Titans are postponing the ceremony and look forward to celebrating the moment with them at a future date. 615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on Chris Johnson, Brent Peterson, your memories of this day 25 years ago. We will, of course, get into the Tennessee Titans throughout the program. But coming up next, Chad Withrow will join the program. We'll get into the Titans and college football and everything else with our friend Chad coming up next. 615-737-1025. Vanderbilt football hosts Delaware tomorrow at First Bank Stadium. Pregame begins at 1:30 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Kickoff is at 3:15.
Catch the Metro High Vanderbilt School football game of the week every Friday at 7 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by LPL Financial Nashville and Patrick Conger.
Tonight's game will feature Maplewood versus Hillsboro. Before and after the game, join Connor Newt and Nick Frazier this week, who will have complete high school football coverage with the game Blitz, powered by Southeast Financial Credit Union. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Again, if you missed the breaking news right before we came on the air, the Titans are postponing the Ring of Honor ceremony for Chris Johnson, which was supposed to be on Sunday before the Jets game. But according to the Titans, due to unforeseen circumstances, Chris Johnson and his family are no longer able to travel to Nashville. So hopefully that ceremony will happen soon. Also, we are mourning the loss of Predators, former Predators, assistant coach and broadcaster Brent Peterson,
who passed this morning at the age of 68. 615-737-1025. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Chad Withrow. Hello, Chad. How are you?
Hey, guys. Doing well.
So, Chad, we had a conversation earlier this week looking ahead to Sunday's matchup between the Titans and the Jets about whether this is a quote-unquote must-win game. Now, I think that's silly because it's week one of a 17-game season. However, I'm not sure there has been a more meaningful week one matchup between two stinky franchises than Jets-Titans on Sunday. If the Titans were to lose to the Jets on Sunday, what do you think an appropriate response from the fan base would be?
Here we go again. that would be the appropriate response from the fan base. I mean, guys, this is a Jets team that looks like they're tanking to get Arch Manning next year in the draft. They're terrible. Geno Smith at quarterback, I just – you got to win this game, find a way. And I think the Titans will, but you got to – it's not a must-win that your season is over if you lose it. You know, mathematically, you're still eligible for the playoffs, even if you lose week one, last I checked. But from a perception standpoint of all of this talk, J.C. Latham talking tough, Robert Saleh talking tough, he better see his guys go to bat for his quarterback or else. All of this talk in the offseason about Cam Ward's improvement and guys being this and that, I mean, you got to go and back it up. I love what J.C. Latham had to say, by the way. I wish it would have come after week one when they went out there and they physically manhandled the Jets and they were able to get a running game going and they protected their quarterback. I'd love to hear talk like that to show a proof of concept of what this team is supposed to be about. And I think what they're supposed to be about is what Robert Saleh is about, which is toughness, accountability, all of those things that we know about Robert Saleh. He's got an identity with what he wants his teams to be, certainly what he had his defenses become at his other stops. And pairing him with Brian Daboll, guys, I think you go out and Robert Saleh loses to his old team that may be the one franchise that is seen as a bigger train wreck than the Titans right now, and they come into your house in the final year of your stadium and they beat you as an underdog. I mean, I don't know if must win, probably not the right way to put it, but if you lose, guys, it's going to be seen as disastrous with Titans fans and across the NFL.
Nobody, Chad, perhaps with the exception of Kyle Brandt on Good Morning Football, are picking the Titans to make it to the playoffs. I think we all are in agreement there. We'll make our official record predictions later in the show. So we are going to define a successful season independent of the record. So what would you consider, Chad, a successful season for the Titans? Assuming, again, they're not going to make the playoffs, so the season will end late December, early January. What do you think, what are the markers you're going to be looking for to whether this season is a success?
I think 7 wins, if they go 7-10, anything better than that, 7 wins or more, and Cam Ward shows improvement. Because you're playing another last-place schedule in the league. I think if you get Cam Ward through the season pretty healthy, I mean, he might get dinged up here or there, but by the end of the year, you're saying to yourself, boy, that was a big improvement from year one, and the Titans won 7 games. I think that's going to be an improvement, and I'll see that as a success for the team. I'll also say this on Kyle Brandt, who I love, by the way. I think he's awesome on all of his shows. Isn't it interesting that he gets paid a lot of money to host Titans events in the offseason? And magically, he's the one person on that panel that's picking the Titans to win the division. Oh, I wonder how that works. Those checks pay when you get paid by teams to come in and host big uniform reveals. And I don't think that was a coincidence that he ends up going with the Titans for the division after that.
Now, Chad, last week, UT had a big victory, obviously. I mean, big in the sense of they won their first game with a freshman quarterback. Faison Bradenton had an excellent game, 26 yards, completed almost 80% of his passes. Headed to Georgia Tech now, how do you think he handles his first big game?
I mean, with the evidence, I think he's going to handle it really well. Mm-hmm. This guy feels different. You know, there's a certain quality about him that it's hard to define, right? You can call it the hit factor, call it whatever you want, but there was just a calmness about his game and how he was going through his progressions. And even when he decided to tuck it and run on a non-run call, on non-design run plays, he just never seemed rushed, never seemed panicked, always seemed together, always seemed to know exactly what was going on. That's a rare trait for any quarterback. It's certainly a rare trait for a true freshman quarterback who just turned 18 2 months ago. I mean, the guy was 17 years old back in early June and just turned 18. There's something different about him. I know David Cutcliffe was on with George Plaster this week, and I heard that clip of him saying that's the one freshman quarterback who really caught his eye over the weekend, that he's really got something, and he's got it together. Obviously very talented, five-star ranking coming out of high school, all that. But, guys, I was very impressed with how he looked. And we could say over and over again, but Furman, right? It was Furman, and he's going to see some tougher players, and he's going to face adversity this week, and we're going to see how he handles it. But I think from what we know about him so far, and it's only been one game, but what we know about him winning that job, about him staying on campus in May when everybody else broke and left and all those things, guys, I expect him to handle everything really well on the road against Georgia Tech. There's a lot of cautious optimism with Faison Brandon and Tennessee fans right now based off what they saw in that game. And I'll point to one play, and I know it was wide open, but it's harder to throw the ball perfectly when it's that wide open. That Mike Matthews touchdown where he drops it in a bucket, puts the perfect amount of touch on the ball, he doesn't have to break stride, and he throws that touchdown. You know, Joe Milton might have thrown that 30 yards too long. Other quarterbacks may have thrown it too fast. I think the ability to throw it with touch was just so impressive on that play from Faison Brandon. I was truly impressed with his debut for the Vols.
Now, we had another debut right here up the street with Vanderbilt. How do you think Curtis did with his time this past weekend?
You know, I thought he was okay. He made one really good throw when I was watching. And I ended up, because of that delay in the LSU and Clemson game with the weather delay, I ended up watching a lot of that Vanderbilt-Austin Peay game. And I thought he was just okay. I think the more interesting storyline is the fans and the chanting for Jared Curtis and the signal that sends to your veteran quarterback when the veteran quarterback really wasn't playing that bad in Blaise Berlowitz. But, I mean, he clearly knows his place amongst the fan base, and there are a lot of fans. Guys, that was the best crowd I've seen for a game against FCS competition at Vanderbilt to open a season, maybe ever, against Austin Peay. So there are a lot of fans that showed up just to see Jared Curtis in his debut, and he wasn't the starter, and they were upset with that. I don't think that sits well with the quarterback. You could tell by Clark Lee's comments post-game it didn't sit well with him. So I'm curious to see how that situation is managed moving forward, where you got a fan base that's starving to see the five-star freshman, and you got a head coach saying, hey, he doesn't give us our best shot to win right now. It's the veteran.
You know what's interesting about that, Chad, is we were talking to Mitch Light about this. He illustrated how rare it is that even the five-star recruits in the last 6-7 years, how few of them actually start the first game. Like, obviously, Faison Brandon did, and then the only other two that we can
Underwood.
Think of.
From Michigan.
Underwood from Michigan. And then Paola?
Rayola.
Yes. Started
Nebraska.
At Nebraska.
Yeah,
and now
Arch
is
Manning
it,
didn't,
we're
getting, right?
I mean, right. Arch Manning didn't even play his first year.
Yeah.
So it's not as common as you think, but that's not the frame of reference for the Vanderbilt fans who haven't had a guy like that. So what when you think about that, Chad, as you watch Tennessee year after year, can you think of a situation that's similar at all where – you know, the fans, it's almost like you never want to be rooting against your own guy. It's one thing to be getting on the coach or something like that, but when you're going against the guy that you're rooting for, that's not easy to handle, I'm sure, if you're Blaise Berlowitz.
Yeah, you know, the last time Tennessee started a true freshman was 2004. Brent Schaefer and Eric Ainge, you know, splitting time as true freshman, and Eric Ainge, of course, eventually won the job. Willie, the one thing I can think about is 1994, Jerry Colquitt starts. And he breaks his leg, has a leg injury early in the game against UCLA. And yeah. Then it was Brandon Stewart and Peyton Manning had both his true freshmen splitting time. There was a moment where Peyton Manning was getting booed in Knoxville, and they were chanting for Brandon Stewart to go back.
Todd Helton was in that mix, too, of all people, the baseball player.
Absolutely. Todd Helton came in and played well for a time also. Then he got hurt and stepped aside to go play baseball, which was a pretty good career decision. Last I checked,
so.
For the Hall of Famer. He did okay in baseball. That's one incident I can think about. Of course, we know the rest is history with Peyton Manning and Brandon Stewart. But, I mean, it's hard to imagine that type of scenario. I think part of this, Willie, and you know the history of Vanderbilt Athletics as well as anybody in this market. You know, it's Vanderbilt football, and it's not like you're getting a five-star quarterback every year. Tennessee football is not getting a five-star quarterback very often, right? It's a rare thing to do for even top programs when you get that top guy. Everybody wants to see that player. And I do think that Clark Lee continues to fight this perception, maybe even within his own fan base, of, well, if Jarrett Curtis went to Vandy over Georgia, I mean, at Georgia, he would expect to sit behind Gunnar Stockton,
right?
Because they're Georgia, and they're winning SEC titles, and they're winning national titles. But at Vandy, how is this kid going to sit at Vandy as the number one quarterback in the country? And Clark Lee does not think that way at all. Clark Lee wants Vanderbilt to win SEC titles. He has stated that goal from the very beginning. I admire him for that. So I do think there's a bit of a disconnect with how Clark Lee views the program and maybe even how Vanderbilt fans view their own program with who should be starting and why he should be starting.
Chad, another part of this that I think of, and I think Nico, when he was at Tennessee, might have fallen into this category, and I don't know the makeup enough of Jarrett Curtis to know if he's made of the right stuff. I trust that he is. I hope that he is. But this has got to be a learning experience for him because he's been showered with this amazing praise in his hometown, and he's earned it. He's deserved it. He was that high and coveted a recruit. And he's like a hero for staying at home and playing for Vanderbilt, going against the grain that so many of the best players out of Nashville have done for decades, right? They don't stay home and go to Vanderbilt. They go off to play. When you can play for anybody, you
George
go
McIntyre.
That way. Sure.
I mean, there's a good example. Think of the name George McIntyre, and he ends up in Tennessee at Brentwood Academy. Yeah.
But I guess when you have that happening, you walk in there, and you still have to earn the job, right? And Clark Lee, that's what he's about. So I wonder, I'm hoping Jarrett Curtis learns from the experience because he's not being just handed it. Because I think it's easy to have that mindset of, well, we've got to play the guy. Well, let's coddle him and let's spoon feed him and let's just hand him everything. Because you feel like if you don't, you're worried that he's going to leave. And that's reality in this day. So I think it's a delicate thing to handle. So I think Clark Lee is being very careful on how he moves through this process.
I think it's a great point. And I referenced earlier Faison Brandon in Tennessee and how Tennessee fans are cautiously optimistic. Well, why are they cautiously optimistic? Because of Nico, who you just mentioned, who after one game looked like a world beater against Chattanooga, right? And everybody's talking about, boy, he can throw the deep ball, he can do this and that. And after one season, he gets in the playoff, and they're thinking, hey, if you're a Tennessee fan, we're set for the next 2 years, and they're going to compete for a national title. And then his dad gets involved. And I really think the Nico situation was more about poor guidance than the kid being a big problem or a distraction. I look at Bryce Underwood, and I think that's a cautionary tale. Guys, he looks like he don't want to be there. He looks like he got paid all the money and doesn't care. His coach isn't there anymore. Sharon Moore is who he went to play for. He doesn't care about Kyle Whittingham and his discipline or his structure. He looks completely defeated and deflated in every press conference. That's what every program that lands the five-star is hoping to avoid. Bryce Underwood is one example. Nico is another one. Very different circumstances, but another example. I think with Jarrett Curtis and with Faison Brandon, and by the way, let's say this about Faison Brandon, about this not being the trend in college football. He wouldn't be starting if Tennessee landed Sam Levitt. Let's look at the history here. They had him on campus before LSU got him, and Lane Kiffin, right?
That whole Joey musical Aguilar chairs thing.
Joey Aguilar found the one judge to deny someone eligibility in Knox County, right? Or Joey Aguilar is going to be the starting quarterback. This was not the plan for Tennessee. This is a necessity out of what they have left, and Faison is the best option for them between him and another quarterback in George McIntyre. But this was never going to be the plan to start an 18-year-old true freshman. So Tennessee's having to roll with that situation. So for Jarrett Curtis, Willie, it always just felt like the plan, that he would come in and be the starter right away, and that plan got derailed because either he hasn't earned it yet or Blaze Berlowitz has been a little bit better than expected. But I will always admire Clark Lee for sticking to his guns, making the decision he believes is right, not catering to a fan or an NIL agent or a young star player or anything else. He's going to do what he thinks is right for his players and for his team to be successful. And I give him full marks for that. I just think the whole situation could get uncomfortable if we get weeks into this thing and he's still not the starter and fans are still chanting Jared Curtis's name and clamoring for him to be in the game.
Right. The fans will have to skip ahead to the chapters where he has totally won the job. But the process of winning the job, I'm hoping, makes Jared Curtis better. And someday, hopefully Jared Curtis would appreciate that, even though it might be hard right now to say, well, I did all this stuff to come to Vanderbilt, and now I've got to wait. Like, hopefully he doesn't get swayed that way and listens to.
And it doesn't help, Willie.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that they didn't look good against Austin Peay, right?
Exactly.
Like,
it's complicated stuff.
If you go out there and set the world on fire with Blaze Berlowitz, and you're up 21-0 after three series, and then you put in Jared Curtis, like, oh, boy, he showed some things, but let's get that veteran quarterback back in who did so well. The fact that they kind of struggled and stubbed their toe here and there throughout the game and didn't really blow out Austin Peay, I think adds some cloudiness to this whole situation as to who should be the starter with the fans. And look, understandably so, but here's what we know about Clark Lee. He's going to do what he feels is best, and he's not going to listen to a fan base on what they think is best.
Quickly, Chad, we have a mini SEC Big Ten challenge in college football this weekend, and the Bickersons over here will discuss that in just a little bit. But we've got Oklahoma at Michigan. We also have Mississippi State at Minnesota, which is, you know, but it counts.
A middleweight bout.
Yes. And then, of course, the main event, Ohio State at Texas, 6:30 p.m. Central on ABC. How badly does the SEC need to come out on top of this mini SEC Big Ten challenge?
I think they're going to win all of them. First off, I think the SEC is going to have a clean sweep in these games.
You hear that, Derek?
I think they're favored in all three, right? Oklahoma's a 5.5-point favorite. Mississippi State, I think, is a small favorite. I'm a 1-point favorite or something on the road. And by the way, that is it's a middleweight bout in terms of teams. It's a heavyweight bout with quarterbacks. I think Mario Taylor is incredible for Mississippi State, and Drake Lindsey is a pro prospect for Minnesota. So a sneaky good QB matchup in Minneapolis this weekend. I think the SEC is going to have the clean sweep. This was the first time since the 1970s that every team in the SEC is 1-0 after 1 week. Now, granted, it was a lot of cupcake games, and those bye games start to happen in week one. But even the games that weren't, the blowout for LSU over Clemson, Auburn beating Baylor, you got Ole Miss winning at the buzzer against Louisville. I think the SEC looks really good so far. They're going to have to go win a national title to officially knock the Big Ten off the perch, and we won't know who does that for a long time. But, guys, I like the SEC to go 3-0 this weekend.
Derek, any thoughts?
Games are played on the field. That's how I see it.
You sound like Kurt Cignetti, D-Mace. We're not all about this hype and everything else. We don't run a hype machine up here in the Midwest.
Absolutely, we don't do
play
that.
The games on the field.
We just play the games on the field. Once they put the ball on the line, then we start playing.
Chad Withrow.
D-Mace, as a Spartan, are you rooting for Michigan this weekend?
Because hell no! I'm not. Listen,
what kind of question is that?
This is the thing about, like, Big Ten people and SEC people. We don't like Michigan, so we're not cheering for Michigan. Y'all don't like Alabama, but y'all will cheer for Alabama if they're playing a Big Ten school. So, nah. I hope Michigan loses.
I hope
Michigan loses. What's that?
I'm with you on this, but I'm with you on this. Mm-hmm. I hate the SEC mentality of cheering for other SEC teams. Guys, I want every other team that's not Tennessee to lose.
Precisely. I feel the exact same way.
Conveniently, much like SEC fans will, you know, brag after the fact, hey, look at all these wins for the SEC. I bet D-Mace will come back on Monday. Look, the games are played on the field. Look at the powerful Big Ten. And look at Michigan bouncing back.
Listen, there's some truth to what you're saying. Okay, so I give that to you. Yeah. I leave Michigan out of it. I say everybody else won except Michigan. So
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donicky joins us every Friday. Chad, as always, a pleasure. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
P.J. Fleck going to have to row that boat, guys. That weekend for the Big Ten to have success. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yep.
See you, Chad. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the football conversation. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if it's going to be Titans or college football coming up next. We'll all find out together. But it will be about football. 615-737-1025. Heading to Nissan Stadium for the Titans season opener this Sunday. Stop by John Bon Jovi's before and pregame with 1025 The Game. JBJ's has the best food on Broadway, cold beer and cocktails, and stunning skyline views, including two epic rooftops. The pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Old National Bank, Richmar Florist, and Tri-State Water, Power, and Air.
Well, it means everything to us. We want to win, not only for, you know, ourselves and the culture that we're setting, but we want to win for him too. Not a lot of coaches, you know, coach the style that he coaches with. He's very straight to the point. This is a big opportunity for all of us. We get to go, you know, show, you know, the new Titans, you know, what we're about, the physicality, the fast, the violent that we continue to preach each and every day. I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm happy to be, you know, a key, you know, factor in whether we win or lose a game, and, you know, continue to, you know, help my teammates and, you know, the whole building, you know, try to win each and every week.
That was Cam Ward earlier this week. He says we're going to see the new Titans on Sunday against the New York Jets. And if you want to see those quote-unquote new Titans, tickets are cheap. Zach Rosenblatt, friend of the show, mm-hmm. Jets reporter for The Athletic, tweeted earlier today, tickets for Jets Titans in Nashville are currently as low as $22 on Ticketmaster. Not sure I've ever seen tickets that low for a week one game. So if you want to see these new Titans, tickets.
It's a bargain.
It is a bargain. And I want to know what these new Titans are going to look like. And Chad Withrow, in the previous segment, referenced a quote from J.C. Latham earlier this week. Now, I'm going to have to clean it up a little bit because J.C. Latham used some potty words, as my five-year-old son would say. But here's what J.C. Latham said, which is what Chad Withrow was referencing in the previous segment. Quote, culture is what you stand for and what you allow. This offseason, we all did a moment of self-reflecting of, we want to be the offensive line that we know we can be. We can't be no pushovers. We can't be nobody's B-word. B-word. Just being completely honest. So all the late hits, all the extra stuff that defenses do, if we want to be what we know we can be, we can't stand for that. So I guess the new Titans are going to take no blank from anybody. Mm-hmm. But
they don't want to be somebody's bowling ball.
That's one word for it.
I mean, listen, I love this new attitude, especially from the offensive line. Because in my experience, the offensive line is a true reflection, and the defensive line is a true reflection of your team. If you got a nasty, physical, you know, don't take no bleep offensive line, that's the way your team's going to be. If you have a passive offensive line, I think that's the way your team's going to be. Same with the defense. And to hear, and not just hear, but to see it. We're actually seeing it. And now it hasn't been real games, quotations, but we're seeing it, whether it be they haven't been the unit we've been talking about in a negative light, the offensive line. Actually, we've been saying, man, this offensive line looks pretty good. Carmona, this rookie, man, he's really flashed everybody, you know, as Willie would say. And then you see Peters getting better. And JC, it seems like he's a different player. It seems like he's stronger, more physical, more technical sound. So I love hearing this. But when I hear it, this is what I expect. I can't watch the game and then think, oh, man, they aren't this. They aren't that. They're still doing this after what JC said and after what we've seen throughout the preseason. If we watch Sunday and we see an offensive line that resembles something other than what we've seen and what we heard JC say, then we're going to have a problem with it.
I think it's great to have the mindset. And you see people like JC Latham and Cam Ward pushing the story. They're pushing the narrative. They want to become a tight-knit group that plays the right way. Robert Saleh is setting that tone. I think, though, we're at the stage where all of the talk has been exhausting. We've been hearing it all summer. We've been hearing it all training camp. And we're just, I think everybody's just waiting to see. Let's see it on the field now. Because the philosophical part of this is not insignificant. Don't you think, Derek? I think it's important, mm-hmm. right? That's what training camp is for. You set the tone. You try to build your foundation. But until it gets put to the test, what's the Mike Tyson thing? Everything is great. Everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. So it all starts on Sunday. They're going to get punched in the mouth. So I even think the media is fatigued with all these storylines.
Yes.
Do you agree? I mean, we've been hearing it. So that's what they want. Everybody wants to know the answers, but there's nothing they can really prove until they go do it.
Yeah, and that goes along with what, you know, Cam Ward said. And he knows the wording. I think a lot of times, sometimes, wording means everything. I know he's happy, but using the word excited, I'm excited to go out there and help my team win. I'm excited to see what's going to transpire when those rough times or those tough moments come in the game. I'm excited to see how I react to that. And a lot of this is going to be on Cam Ward and how he reacts to certain things that happen in the game. We were watching and we were texting back and forth the game last night with Brock Purdy. The reason Brock Purdy, and I said this yesterday about Cam, but the reason why Brock Purdy stays on schedule, because he has the threat of running a football. He's gifted enough and he's fleet of foot enough to get outside the pocket and move around and then run if he needs to get some extra yardage. That's what opens up your offense even more, because now I have to pay attention to you. Not that you are, you know, running around here like Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, one of those guys that we know can run really well, but giving the threat of having that play happen if you're not paying attention to me. That's that one ingredient I think that makes Brock Purdy even better, is that he has that ability, sort of like Steve Young, sort of like Joe Montana at one point, the young Joe Montana. They have the ability to get outside the pocket, make things happen either with their legs or throwing the football. And that's the part that Cam is going to have to learn, is to make plays within, if it's not there with his arm.
I agree wholeheartedly with what Willie Donick said a few minutes ago. We have exhausted every talking point we can come up with to preview the Tennessee Titans. So I am so thankful that there is an actual meaningful game on Sunday that we will be able to digest and evaluate starting Monday at 3 p.m. for us, but it will start much earlier than that, I know. And I hear what Cam Ward is saying. He's excited to show off the new Titans. They're going to be fast. They're going to be physical, all gas, no brakes. It's like Patches O'Houlihan and dodgeball. You got to get angry. You got to get mean. Like, that's what the Tennessee Titans are preaching this offseason. And I really want to see it. I want to see J.C. Latham rough up a Jets defensive end if that defensive end gets a little bit too close to Cam Ward. I want to see all of these things. They all sound nice, but they're all buzzwords. And I am thankful, and I know all of you are too. We are thankful that we will actually have a game to watch that means something in just 2 days, because my God, am I tired of talking about all of the preview type things. Thank goodness the game is on Sunday. 615-737-1025. Cam Ward says we're going to be introduced to the new Titans on Sunday. What does that look like? 615-737-1025. But before the Titans play on Sunday, we've got a full slate of college football. As I mentioned to Chad Withrow, a mini Big Ten SEC challenge. And I need the Bickersons over here to work it out. And we will do that next. 615-737-1025. Tomorrow, Middle Tennessee State football takes on Marshall at 6 p.m. You can catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3, with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.